Every morning, and sometimes once or twice during the rest of the day, I go to my backyard, whistle, and set a handful of peanuts in my two platform feeders. Any crows or blue jays in hearing range fly over. Most stay up in the trees waiting until I go into the house before they drop to the feeder, but sometimes I've barely stepped back before one crow flies in and grabs a peanut while I'm still right there. I've always loved crows, but this makes me inordinately fond of them. So I was distressed a couple of weeks ago when I noticed one spending a lot of time on the ground or perching on my fence or feeder post. I could see from its full-length tail, lack of a reddish gape or red mouth linings, and brown rather than blue eyes that it was an adult, but I could not tell if this one was a he, she, or they. Many birds divulge their preferred pronouns via their plumage, but not crows, jays, or chickadees. Whichever it was, it always waited till I was pretty close to fly off, and never gained much altitude or went far. It was drinking water in puddles and my bird bath, and eating under the feeders, and its droppings looked normal. I had no idea what was wrong. It rained all night Thursday, June 27th, and the crow was soaked in the morning, so I went out and picked it up. I could feel how prominent its keel bone was, meaning it was badly nourished, so I placed it in a box and brought it to Wildwoods, our local wildlife rehab facility. Krista told me if they couldn't determine a straightforward issue that they could help with, it would be taken to Wild and Free in Garrison, Minnesota, where the staff turns to euthanasia only when the situation is hopeless, doing their best even when the bird is just a crow. I offered to transport it, and sure enough, later that afternoon, Krista called and asked if I could pick up the crow and a fawn with severe neurological damage. Krista didn't know its history when Wildwoods opened the next morning at 10. Garrison is on Mille Lacs Lake, about 115 miles from Duluth, down I-35, and then on two-lane roads through scenic forests and farm country. Both the deer and the crow were very quiet for the first hour and a half, even after I had to brake hard when a doe and fawn jumped out of a hidden ditch straight into my driving lane. It would have been as ironic as it would have been terrible had I hit them. Then about a half hour before I made it to Garrison, the little fawn started bleating, a quiet but insistent ma, every 10 seconds or so for the final half hour of the drive. My maternal instinct is too strong for me to have been able to ignore this. It had been fed just before we left, so the situation was hardly dire, but suddenly getting there felt urgent. I felt unadulterated relief relinquishing it to Wild and Free. On the other hand, I felt very sad bidding the crow farewell. I filled out the online Contact Us form requesting an update and have since emailed Wild and Free, but rehab facilities stretch their limited resources beyond capacity caring for wild creatures, especially in baby critter season. Keeping inquisitive bird watchers in the loop must be given a much lower priority. People often say no news is good news, but no. No news is, literally, no news, making it neither good nor bad. Sadly, our poor human brains have trouble dealing with uncertainty. My crow either survived or didn't, just as Schrödinger's cat is either alive or dead in that box. My local crows, who had much closer personal relationships with the crow than I did, stayed away from my yard for a few days while it was grounded, perhaps imposing a crow-style quarantine just in case what was wrong was contagious. They started coming in force again this week, dealing with the uncertainty of what became of their friend with a graceful acceptance. It's not that they've forgotten the poor thing. When a crow is removed from an area and later returned, local crows immediately remember and accept it back into their little social group. We humans lack crows' grace to deal with life as it unfolds. Crows never waste their time obsessing over news that is 90% speculation about what may or may not happen. They keep abreast of what is certain, doing their best to fend off real and immediate dangers while wisely making what provisions they can against an unknowable future. Whether I'm wondering whether a crow survived, worrying about whether and when my cancer will return, or fighting a political agenda that would destroy too many elements of the environment we all depend on, my neighborhood crows have a lot to teach me. Even as they warn about and fight off predators and other urgent threats, they maintain a zen-like acceptance of life's mysteries. I wish I could be more like them. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.